This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
For Master Dogen's Zui Monkey. Our life changes moment by moment. It flows swiftly, day by day. Everything is impermanent and changing rapidly. This is the reality before our eyes. You do not need to wait for the teachings of masters or sutras to see it. In every moment, do not expect tomorrow will come. Think only of this day and this moment. Since the future is very much uncertain and you cannot foresee what will happen, you should resolve to follow the Buddha way, if only for today, while you are alive. To follow the Buddha way is to give up attachment to your bodily life and act so as to enable the Dharma to flourish and to bring benefit to living beings. So we are in a rapidly changing time. We are in the midst of our life changing moment by moment. And of course, this is always true. There is no moment in which it's not true. But sometimes those changes appear more clearly, more dynamically. And so, having closed our doors to keep the residents safe and others from who might have come here safe, and to try and contribute to the good health of the larger community, the whole community, we will be practicing in this way for the time being. And so we are joined by some who are at home. And I hope those of you who are at home will do as much as you can from home in terms of chanting and bowing and sitting and listening. So we can all be doing that together. Our life changes moment by moment. It flows swiftly day by day. Practice is every day, and it's for every day. And so we practice sincerely and diligently all the ordinary parts of our day, from morning till night. And we practice it as though extinguishing a fire upon our head, realizing the great matter of life and death is a great matter. And in this way, our ordinary life becomes more and more realized as the way. In other words, what ordinary is becomes transformed. We see it, experience it in its true reality. It's not that we make it non-ordinary or make it extraordinary or make it anything, but rather we see it as it actually is, realize the aliveness that is always present within it. And we also practice for those days that are not ordinary, for the times when we are met with something for the first time, and we have to, and it's hard to reach back to precedence. Well, what did we do last time? What did I do last time? There was no last time for this. At least not for me or for you. And so practice is having practice, having a refuge in the path is, I think that's when we realize how extraordinarily fortunate we are. And when things have been disrupted or are turbulent, and there's stress and anxiety and doubt and concern, fear, When things are changing and we're facing new issues, new questions, new decisions, we have to take action. We're not entirely sure what the consequences will be. We realize how much we are not in control of. This pandemic is such a dynamic example of that. In the midst of all the science and the past experiences of this and all the expertise that is being brought to it, to also know how much we don't know. And so in those times, it's easy to forget. Remember, sati, mindfulness, is to an aspect of that is to remember. And so we can very easily forget. We can forget our training. We can forget we have a refuge in the path. We can forget to practice mindfulness. We can forget that the three worlds are mind. This is not something that's happening apart. Dogen's teaching comes to mind as something we can forget, that our precipitous assumption that this present phenomena is not offering us further passage, is not offering us a gate to liberation, he says, is not Buddhist practice. In other words, to understand that this moment is a practice moment. And in a sense, the more urgent, the more critical it is, the more important it is, because the stakes are higher. And so we remember. We remember what we need to bring to mind. When we get led by all of those emotions and obsessive thinking and blame and future thinking, to remember. And so how do we recall? What is it that we need to recall? So in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, there's a nandro, a preparatory practice called the four reflections or the four remembrances. We might think of them as four meditations. How do we remember? Yesterday in retreat, we were looking at faith. We were discussing faith. And how do we bring forth faith? Faith in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Faith in humanity. Faith in our capacity to meet this time. And so the first of those four meditations is to appreciate this human birth, this precious human birth that we have. Because of karmic causes and the conditions, we have appeared in this life in this way. And from a Buddhist perspective, that's considered fortunate because we have, through the course of our lives, enough experience of dukkha, of suffering, to inspire us to raise bodhicitta, to seek the Dharma, to seek a way to free ourselves. In the six realms teaching, the God realms, this is what gets lost because life is too pleasant, too comfortable, too good. And so the gods forget. They forget that they entered that realm because of their diligent practice and all of the good karma that they created. They forget that, and so they just sort of live off the interest of those efforts, and eventually they go bankrupt, right? And they fall back into a more difficult realm. But we don't experience so much suffering that we can't engage the path. And so the hell realms, the hungry ghost realms, are those realms that are just so unremittingly difficult that it's not possible. And so the human realm is considered the realm where there's more of a middle range that, of course, varies, can vary widely and varies widely for different people in different times in our lives, but that within that, there is a possibility. Also that although we see how deeply bound we are to our habits and our patterns of thought and behavior and emotion and reactivity, which is an aspect of what's considered the animal realm, sort of living out of a dogmatic mind and kind of a tyranny of instinct, that we have those strong habits, but we also can choose. We make choices. So we can feel a very strong impulse in one direction and go into a different direction. We can do that. And also that hopefully we live long enough that and have experience enough life that we can actually raise bodhicitta, but we don't live so long that we can put it off forever. And this appreciation for this precious human life is not a human-centric, sort of human-dominated model, that we are, it's not elevating the humans above everyone else as being apart and superior, and therefore that the rest of the world is there for our, you know, to satisfy our desires, but rather as humans, because we have human consciousness, we have this enormous power to do good. We have this enormous power to be of benefit, to realize Buddha mind, to realize the mind of all sentient beings. And that having been born in this form, we have been fortunate enough to have not just raised bodhicitta, but to have encountered the Dharma. You know, we can so easily take that for granted. And not only that we have encountered it in the sense that it exists, but that we can actually encounter a place where people are practicing, teachers who are teaching, that we encounter the teachings themselves. We can learn the practices that have come down to us. We can practice within a sangha. There are people who don't have that available to them, either in total or in parts. You know, within any power, a power in a sense is just a force, an energy that can be used in different ways. And so the power, if we think of it that way, of this precious human birth, is that we have the power to create unimaginable confusion and pain and suffering, divisions, anxiety. And of course, much of human history is the story of that. But we also, the same forces, those same energies, the same instrument that we are, has the power to bring forth unimaginable. Clear seeing, generosity, compassion. The path of the bodhisattva, in a sense, is an unimaginable path. Right? That's why the four vows are so great. Because in the beginning, it's hard to even conceive. How could this be true? How could this be my life? And so that's the power that we have, unimaginable compassion equally for all beings, loving kindness, an unimaginable serenity, calmness. That we have the capacity to inspire. I was once asked by a teacher, you know, how, in the company of his sangha, how I inspired students. How do I inspire students? And I'd never really been asked that question directly before. And I thought for a moment, and I said, I have to be inspired. If I am inspiring anyone, if I have that capacity, it has to come from my own, and I have to be inspired. It can't be something apart from that. And to think that each of us in our own ways has that ability to inspire others as well as to be inspired, that we can see. That we have the capacity to follow good examples. We also, that's easy to see. Sometimes it's harder to see that we can be that good example. We are an example all the time. We can be a good example, a positive example. And at a time like this, it's most important. That's why relying on training, to be training our mind, to be living the Buddha way, living in accord with Buddha Dharma, in our thought, words, and actions, means that that's what we do. Right? That's not something that we've just, you know, purchased and put in the closet for a rainy day. That's what we're doing every day. So that when it is a rainy day, when it's a day of difficulty, that's what we do, and we may do it with more awareness of how important that is for us and individual and for everybody else. And so this is really a time to, in particular, to turn to practice, in particular, to turn towards our training. I was thinking of when we did a retreat in the city with the Earth Initiative, and we went up to the Inwood Park where there's a some old growth trees. There's a park there at the north end of the island. And everybody went off and spent some time doing some work in these woods alone. And when we came back, one of the students said that in the midst of these trees, these sort of antiquity of these trees, she said, "I felt very insignificant, I was in the midst of something very large, very old, vast and powerful." She said, "But I didn't feel like I had no impact. I felt insignificant, but with influence." And I thought, what a perfect way of expressing our insignificant and impactful human lives. Insignificant because they come and go in a moment. Because we're just one sentient being amidst an infinite number of sentient beings. But we have influence. The second meditation is on death and impermanence. And I think it's good to think of these as meditations. These are practices to reflect on, to remember that we are alive. We have this precious human life. That is, we have been born into this life as human beings, and it's precious both because of all that power we have and all the possibilities. And not just to bring forth good and alleviate suffering, but also to create and experience beauty, wonder, gentleness, the sublime, inexpressible experience of a late winter, early spring morning. It's also precious because it's fleeting. Dogen says, you don't need to wait for the teachings of masters or sutras to see this. In every moment, don't expect tomorrow will come. You know, because of the day-to-day nature of our lives, today has a lot of similarity to yesterday. Tomorrow, we assume, is going to be very much like today. And that's also one of the things we receive in a time of change, is suddenly today is not like yesterday at all. Not. It's a different kind of day. And if we look closely, we realize that's actually always true. And so he says, think only of this day and this moment. The future is very much uncertain. We cannot foresee what will happen. Of course, we plan, we think, we know, but we don't actually. And so how to think of only of this day, as he says, and this moment, but without becoming narrow-minded. This is where sometimes people confuse. If I just am mindful of this moment, then everything else is somehow going to work out. And so this is where that dedication to this moment within a view which is also large, an understanding which is large, to practice the immediacy of now, because that's the only true thing, but within the boundlessness of time and space. And so the future is uncertain. We don't know what will come, and we can work towards what we would like to come without attachment. I mean, that's something every practitioner has to work with. How do you hold your aspiration? How do you hold your desire for the life that you want to be living now, but also be creating, but without attachment, without expectation? And so that in that way, today is completely about today, and it's also about tomorrow. Closing our doors is exactly that. It's about today, and it's about tomorrow. And so, in times like this, when we feel frustration or despair or hopelessness or fear, anxiety, we can get paralyzed, we can become numb, we can feel defeated. When we face matters that are so large, such as this, a pandemic, climate change, the history of oppression, past and present, and how quickly the mind moves towards solutions. Okay, how do we fix it? How do we make it go away? And of course, on one level, we want to address this. We want this illness to abate. We want people to not die. We want it to not spread, of course. But sometimes we move so, in our mind, we move so quickly to the solution, and then not finding a solution, what now? And practice, again, is teaching us each and every moment that we are practicing to realize the way, having already Buddha nature complete within us as we face the things that obstruct us. And on a path in which change is happening. Obstructions are diminishing. Delusion is being illuminated. Attachments are being released. Joy is arising. But it's happening because, and to the degree that we let go of that dualistic notion of broken, fix it. Our life changes moment by moment. It flows swiftly day by day. This is the reality before our eyes. Bill Waldron in his book says, from the early Buddhist perspective, the problem is that we accept the sense of separateness as a given, as reality, as who we are, as the way things are. And we take this unexamined intuition, belief, as the basis of analyzing our experience. In other words, that's the reality from which we view everything else, rather than as the object of our analysis. In other words, we presume that that sense of autonomous self, of separateness, of everything existing in permanence, not impermanently, but as permanent objects, we take that as a reality and then we look out at the world and try and make it work. Figure it out. Rather than taking that sense of separateness, that sense of self, that sense of objectification of everything and ourselves as the focus of our study. In other words, rather than focusing on the symptom of the illness, which we don't even realize is a symptom, we turn our attention to the illness. And he goes on saying it's this deep sense of not doing that we are separate from the world, that we can hold on to something that is truly impermanent ours, that leads to frustration and futility and suffering. He says, thus the Buddha describes the arising and passing away of the world in the very same terms as the arising and passing away of suffering. They're the same. And he speaks of this, it teaches this in terms of the Four Noble Truths. We have to study and understand how it arises, this world, this suffering. We have to practice freeing ourselves of attachments, of all that we grasp at. We realize awakening, liberation, nirvana, cessation, and we practice the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path. So the arising of suffering and the arising of the world, the Buddha says, is the same thing. He said, in this fathom-long body with its perception and thoughts, through its perceptions and thoughts, I proclaim the world to be. That in each moment, with this mind, with this consciousness, I proclaim the world to be. This is the world. Of course, we're not doing that consciously. We're not doing that in those words. We don't have to. It's so integrated that that's just what the world is. And then the Buddha says, what is the world? He says, what is the origin of the world? Independence on your eyes and objects and your consciousness. The meeting of these three is contact. Something appears. And within that contact as condition, you have sensation. And with that as a condition, you have a sense of craving towards pain or pleasure. And with that, there is grasping, attachment. And with that, there is coming into being, a sense of self. And with that, there is birth, sickness, old age, and death. This is the origin of the world that happens in each and every moment. And so, what is the world that we're creating? And as I spoke about recently, what is the consciousness? The I see, the object is the reality before our eyes. What is the consciousness that is bringing forth, that is originating the world in this moment? So as we read the news, as we inform ourselves, as we see what's happening in the world around us, as we see how countries and people and communities are responding or not, as we reflect on our own responses, as we see what's happening inside of ourselves, what is the mind that we're bringing to each of those moments of awareness? The Buddha said, that is the origin of the world now. There's a story that when the 16th Karmapa was meeting with the members of the U.S. Congress, a congressperson leaned over and said, Your Holiness, could you summarize the whole of the Buddhist teachings in one sentence? And it says, without hesitation, the Karmapa said, everything changes. That's it. And everyone can understand that. And we can spend the rest of our lives understanding that. So deep. Those two words, the meaning of those two words is. And so to study death and impermanence, we turn towards the only true thing, this moment, this breath, this mind, this body, these emotions, this mental state, this grasping, this release, this news feed, this fear. And in that, because all things are non-dual, life and death is the reality before our eyes. Practice and training is to see that more and more and more. That's why the Buddha said, I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape this. I am of the nature to become ill. I cannot escape this. I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape this. Everything dear to me, everyone I love, changes. Now, right now, is in a state of change. There is no way to escape that I will be separated from them. We will depart. You might leave first. I might leave first. We cannot foresee the future. But this we know. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. They are the ground upon which I stand. What are my actions? What are my actions? And so karma, cause and effect, is the third meditation. To study it, to understand it, to participate knowingly, with wisdom, with compassion. And, you know, our reactivity, those deep patterns, our emotions that arise out of fear and anxiety and anger that can just grab hold of us, or we can grab hold of them and then create new actions. These are the moments that we want to really be attentive. You know, I was just reading a story in the paper paper this morning that, because I was concerned, you know, is there need to be a concern of shortage of food? And what this news feed said is that there's enough food. There may be some trouble with workers falling ill and being able to get it to everybody, but there's enough food. But because people are afraid, people are going out and buying as much as they can. And so when you go to the store, there's no food on the shelf. Whereas if we took what we needed, right, and left some for everybody else, then what they're saying is, we'll be okay. We're okay. You don't have to do that. It's hard not to do that, right? Not being able to foresee the future, seeing other people do it. And so again, it's a time of, how do we take care of ourselves? We have a community to take care of. Everyone everywhere have people they want to take care of. Of course, that's our responsibility. And how do we not put that in front of or over taking care of everybody else? You know, listening to people, these video clips of people in Italy who are quarantined to their apartments, that are up on the roof singing in 2- and 3-part harmony, ballads and songs and opera arias. It's like, okay, that's a nice way to take care of each other. And all of this really is about recognizing dukkha, right? Samsara. Everything is impermanent and changing rapidly. And because we grasp dukkha, we create dukkha. Disappointment, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, discontent. What we love, we cannot preserve. What we dislike, we cannot avoid. What we long for, we may not get. What we want to avoid, it may show up on our doorstep. The flower of youth transforms into old age. Our strength and vitality changes over time. I mean, how many of us, you know, when we were young, and some of you are, by other standards, still young, but when we were really young and we saw old people and thought, wow, look at them. Right? How many of us saw them and realized, oh, look at me. That's me. It was too far away. It was too impossibly far away. I'll never be like that. Why are you like that? Why don't you do something about that? I'm going to do something about that. Samsara is kind of like sitting at a poker game. You know, no matter how good you are, you win some, you lose some, but your fate is always at the risk of winning and losing. So even if you win this hand, you might lose the next hand, and you know it. And so how much comfort and tranquility can there be? And the fifth meditation is the path. Seeing all this, appreciating all this, allowing ourselves to honestly experience this and learning how to experience it. How do we experience it? How do we turn towards the reality before our eyes without being crushed, without freaking out, without becoming numb, without just acting unskillfully? There's a path. We have refuge. We have teachings, wisdom, vehicles They're here now. We're in the midst of them. We have encountered them. And the revolution, the fundamental revolution of the Buddha Dharma, I think is not raising bodhicitta. It's not realizing that the self is empty. That's just a matter of course if we practice. The revolution is in that passage of Dogen's, that this present phenomena is a door. And you know, there are lots of traditions that see that and poems that speak that and Hallmark cards that describe that. But what does that actually mean? Is it just positive thinking? Is it just framing it a little bit differently? Since the future is very uncertain, you cannot foresee what will happen. Resolve to follow the Buddha way, if only for today, because we don't know about tomorrow. If only for today while you are alive. In other words, realizing this precious human life, realizing impermanence, all things are changing, everything changes, realizing the sharp edge of dukkha, and bringing forth bodhicitta, having encountered the way, do all that we can to liberate ourselves and others in this lifetime. Act in such a way, give up attachment to this bodily life, give up our fears. So what's the ultimate fear? Loss. The ultimate fear is loss of something. Your life, your health, our circumstances, our ability to do this, the stability of a nation, the loss of lives of others, it's loss. Everything changes. I am of the nature to grow old, to fall sick and die. Everything I hold dear, I will lose. This we know. Knowing that, we don't just say, okay, well, screw it. You know, let's just wait for it to come. In the first moment as children, when we realize that death happens and we realize we're mortal, we don't just sit down and give up. We live. Dogen says, one who does not step forward cannot accept the Buddha's teaching. If you don't bend, you cannot stop floating along in birth and death. And so in the presence of this pandemic, we have to bend. Right? And in bending, we cause some harm. Right? And so we have closed our doors, and there are people that we love, that we want to provide refuge for, and we have to provide that refuge in a different way. In a sense, we have to love each other in different ways. Take care of each other in different ways. So that we, in bending, we can work towards stopping the flow of birth and death, free ourselves. Take care of today. And so, as you know, we talked about last night with the residents, and as we've, you know, shared with the Sangha, we'll be practicing each day and turning towards Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, turning towards our training. In a sense, doing what we do. Living, taking care of each other, taking care of things. And knowing that everything changes, so what is happening right now is going to change. It may get worse before it gets better. That's fairly certain. And so part of our daily practice should be, and we'll be chanting the Four Immeasurables each day, is holding that in all of those beings that we wish happiness for, that we extend love and kindness to, that we wish that they not be struggling and suffering, that we wish that they have goodness and advantages and good fortune in their lives, and that they know equanimity, that they not be caught in passion and aggression and prejudice. Let's also think about all of the beings, earth beings, the more than human beings, businesses that are struggling right now, and all of the people that work within all of those businesses. And some of those businesses will not survive this. All of the beings that are affected by this and the struggles that are happening already and will happen and will change, will keep changing. And this will pass and we will restore and repair and continue on, because that's what we do. And it will leave a mark, as every action does. Some of those marks are slight, some of them cut very deep. And that's the reality before our eyes all the time. And so as Buddhist practitioners, it really always comes back to think only of today is, what can we do today? Yes, I am insignificant. But what kind of influence can I have? We, as a community, are relatively insignificant. What kind of influence can we have? What kind of inspiration can we receive and give? What kind of example can we follow and offer? Those, I think, are worthy questions to ask, to wake up with, to hold close to us during the day, particularly as we see people acting out of their own fear and anxiety, some in very inspiring and noble ways and some in less so. And so we will make every effort to stay healthy in all ways. Don't underestimate the power of your mind. Don't underestimate the power of common sense. And if for all of us who are staying home, as I said to the residents last night, we're kind of doing ongo the way it's been traditionally done. We actually shut the gate. No coming and going for the time being. Let's hope that changes soon. For those who are practicing at home, are staying at home more, solo retreat. I'm already hearing from students who are saying that they're going to have more time on their hands. They're going to be turning to their practice and trying to stay connected. So may we all put our energies into that together.
Thanks for listening. Do you have physical challenges to visiting Zen Mountain Monastery or Fire Lotus Temple? The Diamond Net is a group of Mountains and Rivers Order students who are available to support your practice. We provide Dharma and other support to Sangha members facing life challenges such as illness or mobility issues. If you would like to visit the monastery or the Zen Center but need some physical help, someone from the Diamond Net can assist you. For information, email diamondnet@mro.org or visit our webpage at zmm.org and look under the Programs menu.